Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Want to make Mom's Day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade, New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker, London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat Mom to the good stuff from just $30.
This episode of the Mosaic Life Podcast is brought to you by the brand new, never before seen, just now at this very moment released OneMosaic.life. That's right. This podcast has a brand new website where you can dig deeper into guest interviews, conversations, meditations, and even talks. You can also find additional resources on everything that we mention. All episode pages even feature an in-page player so you can listen straight from your browser if you're stuck at a computer. Also, and we're really excited about this, we have a brand new email list, which you can sign up for so you can be notified when new episodes come out, when we have guest announcements, when we have merch deals. We are going to be doing merch real soon, and contest announcements. And so that point being said, in conjunction with this website launch, we are running our first ever contest. Here's the deal. Hop on over to our website at onemosaic.life and register for our email list, which we are lovingly calling The Circle. And if you register during the month of May, this month only, you'll be entered to win our Vibe Box. What does one get in a Vibe Box, Trey? You may be asking your computer speakers right now. Well, friend on the internet, let me tell you. When Ernie first pitched this idea to me, he was like, let's send one of the most life-changing books each of us has ever read to the winner. And I was like, dude, you had me at books. Our Vibe Box winner will receive a hand-picked book of inspiration from both Ernie and I. We'll also be including a journal for your use and some other surprises. You can register over at our brand new website, onemosaic.life, by joining our circle. Hello, friends. Today on the podcast, we have the inspirational Frank Agin. I met Frank a few years ago. I'm a member of AmSpirit, and this is, for some context, this is the group which gave me the confidence and the resources I needed to launch my own business. As I was editing this, I really found myself gushing a bit, and I was even tempted to cut those parts out, but I left them in because it's impossible for me to overstate the effect AmSpirit has had on my professional life, my personal life, and subsequently my happiness. And any listener of this podcast will know how important happiness is to me. Frank Agin is the president of AmSpirit Business Connections. It's an organization that empowers entrepreneurs, sales representatives, and professionals to become successful through networking. He's also the host of the Networking RX podcast, a weekly short-form podcast with insights and interviews related to better business relationships. And he narrates the Networking RX Minute, a micro-podcast with daily ideas and inspiration. Finally, Frank is the author of several books, and we discuss a few of them in the podcast, including Foundational Networking, Creating Know, Like, and Trust for a Lifetime of Extraordinary Success. We dig into how important it is in times of stress and crisis to not have a fear-based mentality. We spend a good amount of time discussing community and how we can better serve it and give back to the individuals who have shown support of us. And to those who hear the word networking and think it's a dirty word, there's a reason for that. And so we discuss how to not be that guy while networking and building your business. I am thrilled to welcome Frank Agin to the Mosaic Life Podcast. Enjoy. Welcome to the Mosaic Life Podcast.
Life is an art, every moment a picture painted in time. The color, texture, lighting, all context. The Mosaic Life vision is to cast a warm glow on your masterpiece, highlighting the struggle while showcasing the culmination of years of hard work.
Join us for guided meditations, interviews with authors and leaders, and engaging conversation as we explore the depths of our consciousness. All right, perfect. How's it going, Frank?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I'm doing well. Busy.
That's good. That's good. A lot of people seem to not be so.
Yeah.
Well, Frank, before you jumped on, Ernie and I were just talking about how things seem to be trending back toward the old normal. Ernie himself has a retail job that he's getting back into, and we were just discussing, you know, at what point is he willing and able to pursue his business full time? And a lot of us are questioning if we even want to get back to that normal anymore. So, I mean, how has your normal changed, especially in a world that focuses so much on face-to-face interactions?
Yeah, you know, it's in AMP Spirit Business Connections, the meetings went pretty much virtual almost overnight, and it didn't really skip a beat. And to be honest, I'm a little nervous about how this whole thing's going to unravel. I'm nervous about that. I mean, it was easy to see, okay, we're jumping into this, jumping out is going to be a whole different story. And there'll be some groups that won't be able to meet because of social distancing issues, and or they're going to just have to find other places to meet or different alternatives. So it's really kind of hard to say. But there have been a lot of positives too. I was sharing with somebody that last week, or maybe the week before, I'm losing track of days and weeks.
You and everybody else.
But there was a, I was on a meeting up in Cleveland at 8 o'clock. There's a chapter meeting up there, and got invited to go. And then at 10 o'clock, I had been invited to a chapter that met at 7 a.m. in Phoenix. So that's 10 o'clock our time.
Right.
And then at noon, there's something here in Columbus, and then there's something in Pittsburgh later that afternoon. And, you know, in a normal environment, I'm booked.
Right.
I've got this meeting in Cleveland. I'm not going to be able to make it back to Columbus for a noon meeting. I can only do this one thing. And so this has really kind of opened the door for the business to really try some different things that were always there, but necessity never really provided the opportunity for us to try them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in that, aside from the necessity of meeting via Zoom or via any meeting or anything like that, how do you see the interactions changing between people who are networking and trying to build their business, especially people who generally see each other week to week? So it's not like you're shaking hands and introducing yourself for the first time. How do you see those interactions shift?
You know, it's, I think if people had the foundation there before, it's not a real big deal because the trust is there, you know, and I always use high school reunions as a great example, because you go back to a high school reunion, and I don't care if it's 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 25 years, and you have these relationships that just seem to pick up where they left off. The know, the like, the trust is already there, and you're just catching up on things. So in these chapters that have met for years face to face, and all of a sudden they're thrust into a virtual meeting, it's not a big deal. The challenge is going to be introducing new people, and we're going to do it. We'll figure it out. But we haven't figured it out yet, I guess is really where it's at. I don't know. I don't know how that's all going to, you know, how that's all going to unfold. I think about it, but I don't have the answer until you kind of jump in and just start doing it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ernie, we've talked a little bit about this offline, but how has this affected the way that you're talking with your clients or the people who you're prospecting?
Yeah. So because of where I live, I don't do video calls at home. And due to most places shutting down, I can't necessarily just jump from place to place to do video calls. So it's actually helped me in the same aspect as not having to drive from Cleveland to Pittsburgh to Columbus, but I'm just like, okay, it's going to be a phone call no matter what. And I can do that in my room. You know, I don't have to go anywhere for it. So it's actually cut down a lot of, cut out a lot of, you know, driving time for me in particular. Yeah. And so it's all just been phone, I guess, is the, to answer your question, it's gone from a lot of video to just phone.
I don't know. It's certainly interesting. And I feel fortunate in the sense that I operate solely online, but you know, the people that are operating the, you know, within my Amspira group, we have a number of people who have brick and mortar stores and continuing to provide that support. I don't know, Frank, what is the best way that we can continue supporting, not necessarily in a monetary sense, but in just a way that we can keep these businesses open and running?
Well, I think the first thing that we need to try and do with respect to these businesses or really anybody is to get their mindset out of fear. You know, our brains, you know, the human brain has many layers to it.
Right.
And, you know, we've got that prehistoric brain, and then we've got the mammalian brain. And then we've got the neocortex, which is really kind of the human brain where we think and we talk and things like that. And, you know, the prehistoric and mammalian brain does a lot of this quick processing, fear, right? And when this whole thing started coming down, our mind goes to fear. And I remember the Sunday after, I think the governor was saying, okay, we're shutting this down, and realizing that chapters were not going to be able to meet in the traditional sense, and feeling fear. It was kind of a natural thing. And I just made a decision that, you know, I'm not going to feel fear. I'm just going to try and move out of it. I'm going to find a way. And in making that decision, I call it, you know, kind of moving towards courage. I naturally engaged my neocortex, right? Okay, let me think about what can I do? How can we do this? Okay, we got Zoom. We can do this. I can contact these people. I'll do this email. Just kind of putting a punch list together, you know, just Absolutely. Scribbling out. It doesn't really matter what was on the list, but that action engaged my neocortex. And all of a sudden, the slower thinking, the methodical thinking, brain was working. But when that's working, it shuts down the fear, right? So what we need to do to help people to help the first step is to get them to break that cycle of fear and say, you know what, stop and think. You know, let's stop and think. One, what's the likely worst case scenario in the next 30 days? What can we do to avoid that? You know, so if you're a restaurant, you could say, okay, you know what, we can do carry out,
right?
You know, we can keep people employed doing this, this, and this. We can do this. We can do this. And all of a sudden they're pushing away from the fear. And just kind of messages of hope and being positive. And I think that's the first step, because you can't rationalize with somebody who's thinking fearfully.
Absolutely.
And I think of when this whole thing came down, I had sent emails out to the membership. And one of the emails I got a response on, it was a gentleman in a chapter, not in Columbus, but it's neither here nor there, but he was in that fear mode. Oh my God, Frank, you don't understand. My life is done,
right?
You know? And I have all these emails, and it was like, no, it's not. You're going to be okay. No. You know, every suggestion, he just kept operating in that fear mode. And I just had to push away, because he was kind of dragging me down. And then I came back to him on Monday, and I just said, hey, I just wanted to check in to see if you're all right. And he apologized. Sorry for dumping on you. There's a lot going on. Hey, you know, we had more of a conversation then. Hey, have you thought about this? You really ought to think about this. You know, go to your chapter and just be honest with them as to, you know, what you're worried about.
Absolutely.
But I think, you know, the other thing we can do is we can start to brainstorm with people. Hey, have you thought about this? Because when we're kind of stuck in that fear mode, you know, you get that tunnel vision.
Yeah.
You know, and you're not thinking big picture. But when you start to step back and say, oh my gosh, yeah, here, you know here, what?
Yeah.
Here's we an can do this.
Yeah. How can you, how can you pivot your business so you're not just sustaining, so you can actually grow now more than you have in the past? You're absolutely right. And what you said reminds me of an exercise that I've heard about from Tim Ferriss. It's fear setting, you know, explaining to yourself what the worst possible scenario is and realizing that there are a lot of steps to get to that. The worst case scenario is probably not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, as I explained to my wife early on, I said, you know what? Before things go to hell in a handbasket for us, there's a lot of other people who are a whole lot worse off.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so we just need to relax. You know, we don't need to make a run on toilet paper. We'll be fine. We'll be fine. It's kind of our mantra. We'll be fine. Everything will be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it typically plays out that way. You know, after the dust settles, it's like, oh, I was worried about all of this stuff happening, and it actually none of that happened. And in fact, it turns out it's a little bit better, or some of these adjustments were, you know, were needed in the first place. Yeah. You know, I'm really interested by something you said earlier. You said you just chose to. You noticed the fear coming up and you chose to go into courage. Is that something that you have always just had a knack for, like a characteristic from birth that Frank has been able to move from fear to courage? Or is that something that you had to learn, and how did you go about doing that, if so?
Well, I think from birth we're naturally, you know, we're humans, and we have to kind of train ourselves to do that. And when that happened, I'm not sure. But, you know, in thinking it through, it's like, okay, you know, I've got a wife, I've got kids. Now my kids are in college and for somewhat grown, you know, 20 to 23. But they're a little lost. You know, this is new territory for them, right? This has been a good thing from their perspective, because up until now, they have not really known bad times, right? Mm-hmm. Spent the last 12 years of the economy just rolling forward, and they figured, hey, we're bulletproof. We can get a job anywhere. Oh, no, you can't. Mm-hmm. But, you know, certainly thinking about them and saying, you know what, I can't be fearful. Thinking about the members of AM Spirit, that, you know, it's my role is to be a leader. I need to, you know, if I'm going to be fearful, then everybody's going to be fearful. They're all going to be lost. And so I just decided I've worked too hard. I've come too far to have my business be affected by, I don't know how this is going to come off, but I'll say it, by somebody forgot to wash their hands over in China. Right.
Right.
I mean, it's really, really boils down to it was somebody, guy or girl, something happened over there. And it just got out of control. But I'm not going to let that impact me. I've got to figure out a way. And I think most people who are doing well have done that, have just decided I'm going to push past this. What are the options? Let me figure out the options.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like there's a tenacity in there.
Yeah.
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 Awesome.
Well, with AM Spirit, Frank, I mean, you've seen it go through 9/11. You've seen it go through the market crash of 2008. I mean, how did those affect the business community as a whole versus what is happening now? I mean, are you seeing differences, or are you seeing a lot of similarities in helping you navigate these waters?
There certainly are similarities. This has been a little different. You know, I've been operating in AM Spirit in one form or another since 95. So we saw the tech bubble, I guess shortly thereafter was 9/11, you know, and then the market crash in 2008 and now this. They're all different, but what I find is that people are a little less cavalier about things.
Yeah.
I don't wish for the economy bad. I don't wish for things to be bad, but I'll use 2008, for example. In 2008, there were realtors that were my best friend all of a sudden that wouldn't have given me the time of day a year earlier.
Right.
And just things changed. And I think people, you know, again, back to my kids who, geez, Dad, why do you have a financial advisor? That's so stupid. It's so easy to make money in the stock market. Well, it is, you know, it's easy to, you know, it's easy to, you know, shoot fish in a barrel. The stock market was going up every, you know, you couldn't lose. You know, my son works in IT down in Florida, down in Miami, and he's like, I can get another job anytime. You know, that was 6 months ago. Where my wife and I were telling him, like, no, you can't talk like that. Right. You know, you can't think like that because things do change. And having a conversation with him, you know, probably 2 or 3 weeks ago and him coming home from work, or I guess they're all social distancing, but being on a call at work and finding out that, you know, they let half the people go. He wasn't one of them, but they left half the people go. And that right. was kind of a real wake up call for him that, yeah, it's that fleeting.
I mean, the truth is there's no industry that's bulletproof. You'll see these disasters affect different industries differently. I mean, the dot-com bubble was a great example of that. 2008 was a great example of that for realtors, for people in the financial sector. And now we're seeing everybody, business owner or employee, grasping for what they've always had. And so it's that mentality that nothing bad can happen to me. That's not something that any of us should carry with us. And I think this is a very good wake up call for that.
No, I totally agree. And I think, and again, I think it's good from the standpoint that we all realize that we need each other.
We do.
More than we ever did before. You know, when things are going well and you're getting business despite yourself, you know, it's easy to get cavalier. And when you realize, okay, you know, wait a minute here, I do need some help to innovate. You know, I need to take my business online and I do need that computer guy to help me get that set up or, you know, figure it out. So it's, you know, it's not fun, but it'll be good for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Now going back, exiting that fear mentality, that fear mindset. So Ernie and I we've probably dedicated 3 or 4 episodes now to this crisis. A lot of the theme generally is using meditation and mindfulness to calm and center ourselves. From your standpoint, how do you escape that fear center? How do you help other business owners get out of that mindset?
Well, you know, I think exercise is important. My wife and I, we get up, we have a dog. So we get up and walk the dog every morning, 3 or 4 miles. And I think, you know, getting the blood moving is good. I think staying busy is good, whatever that might be. And I don't know if I sent it to the entire membership, but certainly the directors, told a story that, when I worked in, my law firm job years ago, there was a guy who had back surgery and he was going to be on disability. This was in the mid 90s. He was going to be on disability for 6 weeks. And he just made a decision. I'm not going to just languish away in bed trying to heal. I'm going to learn. I'm going to take my new laptop that the firm issued everybody home. And I'm going to learn about this internet thing. You know, I don't know if it's going to catch on, but I'm going to learn about it. And by the time that 6 weeks was up, he was very versed in the internet, had got himself on, they called bulletin boards, I guess, back then. You guys would probably know better than I would. And found somebody who was selling they had an internet service provider business. This is all pre-Spectrum, pre-high-speed dial-up. And he decided he was going to buy it. So he walked in after 6 weeks of being on disability and put his 2 weeks resignation in, said, I got my own business now. And it was really kind of, it was fascinating for people to see. He's like, is he crazy? No. But I think that's, you know, I think that's what people need to be doing is they need to find things to keep themselves busy. You know, all those things that you said, if I ever have time, I'll do. Well, you got time, right. Do them. Whatever that thing is, you know, projects at home, you know, organizing your database, your contacts, you know, LinkedIn is just, I don't know how much time you guys spend on LinkedIn. I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. It is, it's just amazing all the people who have gone onto LinkedIn, starting to do things and, you know, meeting lots of people through LinkedIn. So, I mean, I think there's lots of things out there. So as far as, you know, trying to kind of calm yourself, I think being busy is probably the easiest antidote for most people. I mean, I'm not downplaying meditation at all. I think a lot of that's unless you're good at it and have done it, it might be a hard thing to pick up in a time of fear.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Yeah, staying busy. I mean, just finding you kind of mentioned it when you were talking about moving yourself from fear and from that. I can't remember how you the mammalian brain, I guess, into your neocortex. There was a reasoning process happening. Like you were giving yourself some questions to answer, and that pulled you forward into your rational mind. And so, a person at home could find anything that would give them a sense of curiosity. Something to pull them forward into a thought process rather than this like spiraling out of control into what could go wrong and will go wrong or whatever, you know, our minds do when we're afraid.
Yeah. No, it's, it plays tricks on us, right? Mm-hmm. You start telling yourself stories.
Yeah. 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 Something else that I've heard you almost in every podcast that I had the chance to listen to before this, that you talked about a lot was service. And you mentioned it also in moments prior in this conversation. You know, it's something that's for me, I'm 29. And so for most of my life up until I had kids, actually, I was more just very self-centered and focused on how to get my stuff. And it took time to really understand the importance of paying attention to other people and what I have and what I can do to help other people. So I'm interested to hear about your journey with that and how you came to that point in your life where you realized that, you know, rising tides will raise all ships and started utilizing that.
Yeah. You know, I guess just kind of background on myself and, you know, getting into what I was doing. I'm not from Columbus. I moved here to go to law school back in the 80s. I have a law degree and an MBA from Ohio State. Started my career in a really big firm. I was a tax consultant. I tell people I hated every minute of it, which is not entirely true. I met my wife there. I got paid. So it wasn't all bad, but it wasn't for me. I didn't want to be mired down in the tax code for the rest of my life. So after about 6.5 years, I decided to leave and I went into private practice. And I tell people that a funny thing happened when I went into private practice. And the funny thing was that nothing happened. I had no idea how to get clients. I was in an environment, started my career in an environment where they literally just handed you clients. And the whole notion of getting other clients or getting clients at all was foreign to me. And I was that bad actor running around chamber events, just pushing my cards on people, hoping to pick up a client. I had lunch one day with a friend of mine. Obviously, things weren't working well for me. And go figure, they shouldn't be operating the way I was. But I had lunch one day with a friend of mine. I asked her what I needed to do to become successful. And she said, you need to get into a leads group or a tips club. And that's what led me into what is now AmSpirit Business Connections. But through a couple of introductions, they introduced me to somebody who was starting a brand new chapter. It was up in the Westerville area. And I tell people that immediately it made sense that I could raise myself up by raising up the people sitting around the room. And it's so easy for me to promote other people and so hard to promote myself. And I think that's true of most people. There are some out there that they do a really good job just promoting themselves. But promoting other people, you know, is kind of the most basic way of serving others. And, you know, from there, you know, once you start getting onto that, into that cycle of, you know, if I help other people, things will come to me. If I help other things, people will come to me. You know, the more I do this, the more things will come to me. then you're just really kind of looking for opportunities to help other people and just realizing it's going to come back. And, hey, I want to introduce you to this person because I think it's a good fit. There's nothing in it for me other than the karma I'm going to drive out into the world and just trusting that it'll come back. And, I think it's all kind of from that moment of just looking at what is now this organization and just saying, you know what, I can have a really good life just by trying to help other people have a really good life. And, so that just kind of extends itself out there to charities and, wherever I can help, within reason, certainly. Wherever I can try and help and provide value to the world, I'm going to do that.
Yeah, that's incredible. And it also, now that I'm hearing you speak about it, it brings up this idea too of another way to stay out of those negative places. I was maybe 21 and I was walking to work because I'd gotten into some trouble and I couldn't drive, and I was just down, my head was hanging, and there was a sign that said something along the lines of the best way to get out of a bad mood is to help somebody else get out of one. And so it's also another form of keeping ourselves sane in this crazy time is looking out and saying, how can I help people? How can I help somebody else, move forward?
Absolutely. No, I tell people, that's one of my, one of my ways for kind of getting out of a funk. You know, I tell people it doesn't change anything, right? It just changes how you feel about things.
Yeah.
And that's, nice. That's kind of the step you need forward, just doing something for somebody else, whatever it is. And there's always somebody out there that's got something, they've got it worse than you do. Always somebody. You just need to step out of yourself and look.
Totally.
They're there.
Yeah.
Frank, I think I probably met you for the first time 2 or 3 years ago. I've seen you speak several times, and it really lends credence to what you just said. I feel that you are a selfless individual, and it really lends to the know, like, and trust aspect of the organization. And I pride myself in being in a group that has done very, very well. And one member in particular, he takes the mindset that if you're constantly the person people come to for referrals and recommendations for who can fix the roof or who can service their car, you become that person's superhero. You really do.
Yeah.
You become the person people go to, and then that really helps drive people your way. It's the law of attraction. People love that, and I get it, and it makes so much sense hearing you say that. So I guess if nothing else, thank you for that, because you really, really are very good at that.
Well, thank you. It's I try. I never want to declare I'm anything. I'm not good. I'm not whatever. I'm not generous. I try to be generous, and I just continue to focus on it.
And I think that's a good point of clarification. You mentioned you try. There are people out there who are trying. They're trying to be better. They're trying to help others. Where I think there's a very fine line for people who put up they're wearing the mask of trying, but they're only in it for themselves. And you get that. Mm-hmm. I've been to so many different types of networking groups, and I'm not just going to say this because you're on the phone and because I'm a member of AmSpirit. I've been to so many, and 9 times out of 10, it's, here's my business card. How can I help you? What can we do? Can we set up a coffee so I can make money off of you? And I can't stand that. I really can't.
I know.
And it's, AmSpirit has become my sole source of referrals. And, that just speaks wonders. It's the way that it's run and operated is truly amazing.
Well, I think what it is that people don't understand the words helping others and adding value. They get confused with it. I'll pick on a mortgage lender just as an example. But a mortgage lender might say, well, I do give to my clients. I give them the best possible deal. That is good business. It's not altruism, right?
Right.
There's a difference there. We should be doing the best for our clients and giving them a good deal. You doing a website for a charity out of the goodness of your heart, that's giving, right?
Right.
You introducing somebody where you stand to do nothing, get nothing out of it, that's giving. But I think a lot of people think, well, I service my clients and that's my gift. And that's nice. That's good. I'm glad you do that. But that's really business. And I know exactly where you're coming from, because I know I'm going to open up my LinkedIn later and I'll have six of those. Hey, how can I help you? How can I serve you?
Right.
You know, what is it you need that I have? And it's like, I hear you.
Yeah. And so that's a question that I've tried to ask myself over the last month and a half, is how can I give right now? I've gone so far as to make the offer of, hey, if you need somebody to help you out, put a message on your website saying, hey, we're open for delivery, carry out, what have you. That's something that I'm willing to give my time away right now to help another member in this community. And I guess from your standpoint, you know, I only know my world, my business. That's something that I can do. How can people in the general community just give, not give with expectation, but just give because people need it?
Yeah. You know, I've written a number of books on networking, and people ask me, what's been the best way to sell a book? And I say the best way to sell a book is to give it away. And people who are other authors will kind of look at me like, oh my God, that's the worst way to sell a book. No, what I'm saying is the best way to sell a book is to give it away a little bit at a time, right?
Right.
Here's a post about this. Here's another post about that. This is my expertise. I'm going to share it with you. And if somebody were enterprising enough, they could grab all my little posts and tweets and reorganize them and have my book,
absolutely,
right?
Yep.
Be totally free. I mean, obviously, I have to pay for paper or whatever in their time. But it's the same sort of thing. I think everybody out there has talents, gifts, has insights that they can be sharing. And those are the types of things that they ought to just be putting out there, you know, free to the world. I do see people doing that. I do see, there was somebody who I was talking to, they had a sales training course, like $1,200. And, I'm just going to offer it for $37. Now there's probably a little bit of strategy to that because they're building their database.
Yeah.
But they're truly giving.
Absolutely.
Putting posts out there, doing what you're doing is great. Is that going to benefit you? I hope it does.
Maybe. Yeah.
But that's not the test.
Absolutely.
It's not the test that you all ultimately benefit. It's kind of what you're getting in the moment, and you're not being, there's no expectation, right? You're going to do something for somebody and help some restaurant get something on their website that allows them to, do takeout in a way that they couldn't do before. You're not holding them hostage. They may never come back to you, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's the test.
Yeah. To your point, when you said that you've basically given your books away for free, you, of course, yourself, it's commendable. An author, James Clear, of Atomic Habits, he does the same thing. And it's awesome seeing that. And I tell you, I bought his book because he shared so many excerpts in newsletters on Instagram, and it just enticed me to buy that. I mean, you're not giving yourself away. You are
right.
Bringing people in so they can enjoy what you're offering. I'm 100% with you. I get it. I love it. Now, Frank, you're also involved it's Charitable Roundtable, right? We talked about nonprofits. We talked about how we can benefit people. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. The Charitable Roundtable, it was in 2014. I was kind of sitting and looking at my network and just saying, AmpSpirit's really done a lot of great things for businesses. I kind of wonder how this sort of thing might work in the not-for-profit world. And I knew a handful of not-for-profits, Brian Wallenberg with the Byron Saunders Foundation. I knew of him. And there were a couple others that I had known at the time. And so what I did was I called them in. This was when I say called them in, I had a meeting. It was a lunch meeting, brought them in. It was January of 2015. And I sat down and I just said to the three or four that were there, I know what everyone's number one problem is. It's money. You're all looking for money, right? That's the number one issue of any charity. Really, it's the number one issue of any business, right? Any organization is funding, money. But that's what your number one issue is. So we're not going to talk about that. I don't want anybody to feel uncomfortable talking about the things that they need, you know, the things they're doing to fund themselves, because nobody wants to kind of give away their strategy. Because in a not-for-profit world where there's donations, everybody's kind of your competition. Or at least that was my perception. Right. So I don't want to make anybody uncomfortable. But what I said was, that's your number one issue. Let's talk about all the other issues that face you. And so we had this really nice conversation. And one by one, it went around to the three or four people that were there. And they were just talking about, you know, really, this is a challenge I have. And I've been very amazed over the years. But that was a great session of sharing. And at the end of that meeting, I said, you guys want to do this again? Like, oh, this is great. This was awesome. Because they got to meet each other and they realized that every one of them had challenges, but they weren't the same challenges. And every one of them had solved challenges, and the challenges that they had solved could help other people solve their challenges. So then, you know, the next month, February of 2015, we met again. And it's just kind of grown and it's grown and it's grown. At this point, it's pretty much virtual because of COVID-19, right. At least for another month. But people are coming together and just kind of, hey, I've got this issue, or I'm starting this not-for-profit. You know, what are some things I need to consider? I've got a board. I've got to energize my board. How do, you know, people will say, well, I did that last year. This is what we did. Let me share some stuff with you. So there's really a lot of neat things that have come out of it. And it's just every month it just kind of gets together and shares thoughts and ideas.
I've heard wonderful things about it. And what I guess taking that message, that theme where you're learning what other people have been through and gotten through, and applying it to, I guess, a for-profit standpoint right now where people are struggling to grasp a foothold, and wondering, I guess, what lessons have you learned from just the general consensus of a nonprofit, or what can people do now to really, I'm trying to figure out how I want to ask this question. What lessons have you taken from Charitable Roundtable that can be applied to for business or just anybody in general right now who are struggling?
Well, you know, I think the big lesson I've taken away from the Charitable Roundtable is, in reality, we're all competitors, right?
Right.
You know, if everybody spends their money on a website for you, well, they don't have any money to be an AMP spirit, right? So we're competitors there's only so many dollars in the world. And that certainly was my thinking with respect to not-for-profits. There's only so much donor money out there. If these people start talking about donor money, you know, well, they won't, because they, you know, I didn't think it would work for that reason. And I was wrong. And to the extent that these people really are competitors with one another, but they're serving different passions, and there's a finite amount of money that's going to be donated, but still they can help one another. So in the for-profit world, there are people out there that you can tap into and learn from, you know. You're kind of in the web design business, and so is Tom Anderson.
Right.
You could probably learn from one another.
Absolutely.
You probably help one another. How that looks, I don't know enough about websites to be able to say, well, this is how it would work. And while even you guys know a lot about websites, you probably haven't kind of thought about what the issue might be. But, you know, to be able to reach out and just kind of have that abundance mentality that, you know, the abundance mentality that there's plenty of business out there for all of us. We just, you know, need to not view each other as strict competitors.
And I think that's the beauty.
So that's probably the big.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the beauty of the organization. You've got your core group, but the people who just stick to their core groups are the ones who don't thrive as well as the ones who get out there every week visiting different chapters and visiting different people in these different cities. Because even if I were to go to a group that does have a web designer, I wouldn't shy away from that, because there's always a chance that I'm going to specialize in something that they don't, and we can use each other as those referral sources. And it's so, the way it's set up, it's very beautiful. I really, really thrive from it. And that's been awesome.
Yeah. And I think there are people out there that have that scarcity mentality that, if they succeed, it's taking away from me.
Right.
And I don't think there's anybody out there who is a direct total overlap of anybody else. When I was in a chapter years ago, we had four attorneys.
Yeah.
You know, I know there's a joke in there somewhere, but I was the business attorney. Right. And there's another guy who's the real estate attorney. And Thad is, you know, it's 25 years later, he's still an AM spirit. And then there were two other attorneys. There was a woman who did estate planning, a guy who did personal injury and criminal stuff. He was kind of a courtroom person. And we all had a license that we could do what anybody else did, but it was like, that was, you know, I don't want to do personal injury. I want to be the business guy. You know, I don't really do real estate like Thad does real estate. So when clients would come to me and they would have something that would really kind of touch on what he did, rather than me trying to fumble my way through it, I would just say, okay, here, Thad, you take this over. You make money on it. You're good at that. I'll focus on my stuff. And in return, he would send things my way, things that he wasn't strong at. And it really worked out well.
That's great.
Yeah. So I want to jump in, Frank. I have a couple questions. It kind of switches directions, but I wanted to ask a little bit about writing. And you said you've written some books. How many books have you written?
I want to say 10.
I
think it's 10. Yeah. I know that's a horrible answer.
No, that's cool. You're at the point where you've lost count. I mean, ballpark, 12 to 30, something like that.
Yeah. two of them are novels. You know, it's just, once you've written a book, like I wrote a novel when I was in law school, and it was just kind of more done on just, I had time and I just wanted to do it. And from there I had the confidence I could write, I could do it. But the real first business book I wrote is called Foundational Networking. And when I finished the first draft, I sat down with a friend of mine, a guy by the name of John Millen, who is kind of a leadership communication coach, and gave him the manuscript. And he met with me very sheepishly and said, Frank, here's my advice. His big advice for this conversation, you need to cut out 160 pages. You know, I gave him a 360 page manuscript. It needs to be about 200 pages. That's what people, you know, and I was just like, are you kidding me? Oh my God, it's like my baby. I put all this time into it. I can't get rid of stuff. And he's like, no, you need to get rid of it. You know, you can't be in this book. And so I was able to kind of take that and work that into other books. I wrote one, and then had an opportunity to, I co-wrote a book with Lewis Howes. I don't know if you guys know who Lewis is.
Yeah. School of Greatness.
Yeah. Back 2000, 2007, 2008, we wrote a book called Linked Working, which was a strategy book for using LinkedIn. And from that, I had somebody reach out to me on LinkedIn. I've never met the man, but we co-wrote a book together. You know, he just said, hey, I've read your book on LinkedIn, and I want to do a fable book, you know, like Who Stole My Cheese kind of a book on networking. And so we, you know, talk on and off, and then kind of had this whole, you know, had this epiphany of this book called The Champion. So we wrote that book. So it just kind of one led to the next, to the next. I never, I figured I'd write one book, I'd be done. It hasn't ended up that way. I've started toying around with another book. For now, I might have one more novel in me. I don't know. Sure. I've got an outline for one, but it's just, I'm so busy podcasting. I'm so busy working with the organization. I'm so busy doing, you know, other things that I don't really have the time.
Sure. So when you're coming to that place where, you know, it's time to write a book, of course you've had people reach out to you and that's been, you know, a reason to move into a book. You know, when you're doing something on your own, is it something that just comes to you and you're like, oh, I really know a lot about this, it's time to share it? Or you know, how does that idea come from? Or do you just say, I'm going to write a book and then start looking for ideas? How do you go about that process?
Well, you know, certainly with the first one, foundational networking, the whole notion of it was, the whole notion, I saw people out there who, there are a lot of great books on networking, and they're very skilled and tactical oriented, right? Strategies type things. But yet I saw people who weren't successful, even though they had great strategy, right? Somebody's got a great 30-second commercial. That's nice, but if you're a jerk, it doesn't matter, right? And so the whole notion of foundational networking is that it's really your attitudes and your habits towards yourself and others that really kind of dictate things. And that was the theme I kind of had. And then just from that one epiphany, you know, it just kind of morphed into, okay, how do I go ahead and explain it? Where are the examples out there? And I just kind of pieced it together from there.
Oh, very nice. And so the majority of them come from some type of inspiration, and then you just evolve it from like,
yeah,
idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. I know Trey's really interested in writing. He's even been published online, and he's written a novel as well. And so we go back and forth about different tactics towards writing. And then I also have a client who is in the midst of writing his first book. And so this is just a very interesting topic.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you that you can do it. You know, everyone thinks writing a book is hard, and it can be, but it's, for me, it was literally just every Monday morning, I would just turn everything off and spend 4 hours just trying to knock some stuff out. And over time, you know, some days are some 4 hour blocks were better than others.
Right. Sure.
And, you know, after a year and a half, I had something, it was done. And then the real work starts, and you've got to, you got to edit and do all that stuff.
The fun stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no time like quarantine time to get out there and get your book done. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Frank, as I know you've got to cut off here in the next few minutes, but I thinking out 6, 12, 18 months, how do you see this landscape changing? I mean, do you think we're going to get back to a point where everybody's back to their 9-to-5s and life goes on? Or do you think that we are facing foundational change right now and nothing, maybe some things will be the same, but do you think that things are actually going to evolve and move into this world where we are mostly digital?
Things will get back to normal. Things will get back to a degree to how we knew them. But there will be changes, and I don't know what those changes are. Here's my example or my analogy, I guess. If you remember, and maybe you do or you don't, but if you remember before 9/11, you could walk a loved one down to their gate, watch them hand their ticket off to the agent, step on the jetway to get on the plane. And then you could go back and meet them when they got off the plane. And that, you know, right after 9/11, we had 3 or 4 days where there was no air travel at all. And then boom, the TSA was in action.
Yeah.
And I cannot envision a day where I am not going to have to go through TSA. Yeah. It'll always be the risks are too great. Somebody's going to get something on a plane and can do horrible damage with that plane. And that's never going to go back to normal. I think with this, there'll be something as well. And I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is, but it'll be some sort of fundamental change. We'll still operate the way we always have. I don't think it's going to be wearing masks everywhere. I don't know. You know, I'm not sure. but they're going to put something in place so they're going to be able to prevent and contain something like this happening again.
Right.
Even though the likelihood that it happens again, I mean, it's been 102 years since the last time it happened. You know, the likelihood that it happens again is probably small, but there'll be something that'll come from it.
Yeah, and you, I'm with you. I do agree. I think things will change on a systemic level, but what I'm fearful of is sporting events or events where we just enjoy the company of our community. I know a lot of those are in question for the rest of the year. And so not even if we get the okay to do so, will we still live in fear about doing so? Will there be processes and systems in place where we're all having our temperature measured? I don't know. And I think that's a fear of a lot of people.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know either. You know, and again, we rolled into this abruptly, right? It was just a governor getting on the television, closing the Arnold. You know, it was kind of abrupt. We're going to roll out of it gently, and I think we'll roll. I think we'll ease into things. I think I don't. You know, my kids play soccer. I'm a big soccer fan. I have tickets to the Crew. You know, I don't know what it's going to be like. You know, okay, wait a minute. We're not going to be only every other row is going to have fans once we get back to going to games. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to do that. But I think we have this desire to get back to normal, and that's going to push us to kind of inch in, right? Okay, that wasn't so bad. I think we're okay. Let's take another step. Okay, we managed that. Let's take another step. Okay, there's a setback here. We need to adjust. Right. Let's take another step. So I think we'll be okay. I think there'll be good things out of this. I mean, it's, you know, the cold and flu season won't be what it is because people are, you know, people are serious about washing their hands and covering their mouths and staying home when they're sick.
Absolutely.
And so that will help that. So it's not going to be all bad. It's not going to be all bad.
Yeah, and I'm hoping the positive outweighs the negative, and I think people are getting creative in the ways that they're conducting business, and you know, certainly from the element of AM Spirits, I know our group has moved virtual as hopefully the vast majority have, and we're staying connected and we're continuing to send referrals to each other. And just knowing that you have that backbone, that support system where even if things do go to hell in a handbasket, you have those people whom you can rely on.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Well, we desire that. You know, that's just something we want.
Absolutely.
So it'll happen.
Hey, Ernie, before we kind of bring things to a close here, I wanted to see if you had any other questions for Frank.
I don't have any questions at the moment. I've just appreciated soaking in this conversation. I know you guys have a lot in common with what you're doing and with you being in AM Spirit and leading AM Spirit, Trey. And so that's been really nice to hear about the landscape of business and how things have changed for a lot of people. And most of all, it's just been great to meet you and learn about you through this process, Frank.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Likewise.
All right, Frank. I like to ask one question of all of our guests before we let them go. I myself am a big reader, and you mentioned that you are as well. And so I imagine your library is vast. If you could name one book that had the biggest influence on your life, what book would that be?
You know, for me, I think it's pretty simple, other than the books I've written. People always ask, what's your favorite book? I always name one I've written because if it's not my favorite, it's going to be nobody's favorite.
Right, right.
But, you know, but as far as a book that's had the biggest impact on me, it's called Bringing Out the Best in People by Alan Loy McGinnis.
Bringing
out the best in people.
Cool.
And the reason it's my favorite is because it was really kind of my first. You know, I go through college and I go through law school and it's tons of reading, and you get done and you're like, I'm done reading, right?
Right.
And somebody handed me this book, and it's literally only 150 pages long. But it just what it did for me is it ignited the desire to learn, to be better, to personally develop. And that has kind of led me into other books. I can't explain the absolute path of each and every one, but here from this, I pick up a John Maxwell book and he references other books and I pick up this and it just kind of mushrooms from there. But that was the first. So that would have to be the one that really kind of, you know, I don't know if another book would have done that. I don't, but it did. So
that's great. That's so important. It's like having a good professor. It's like having a great professor in college, instilling in you the desire to learn. That's so important. So bringing out the best in people, we will link to that in the show notes. Frank, thank you so, so much for doing this. It's only appropriate if I ask this to come to a close by allowing you 30 seconds to do a commercial. It just makes sense to me.
Okay. 30-second commercial. You know what? Amp Spirit kind of takes care of itself. I want to do a commercial for the Charitable Roundtable. If you know of a small not-for-profit out there that needs help, send them to me. I would like to introduce them to the Charitable Roundtable. I'd like to introduce them to several dozen other not-for-profits that are all trying to help one another in meaningful ways. That would be a great gift to me.
Awesome. Frank, thank you. Beautiful. We will have all of that information in the show notes, as well as our brand new website, which is coming out in conjunction with this episode. So please check that out. Again, Frank, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Awesome. Have a great day.
All right. You take care, guys.
You too.
See you, man.
Again, Ernie and I would like to extend a warm thank you to Frank for joining us on this truly inspirational podcast. If you'd like to learn more about Frank, again, all of the links and information that we talked about will be in the show notes in your podcast player, as well as on Frank's episode page at onemosaic.life. A personal endorsement: if you're a business owner in Ohio or even Pittsburgh or Phoenix, I would highly encourage you to check out Amp Spirit Business Connections. Again, I credit Amp Spirit with helping me to have the confidence to launch and grow my business. It has been nothing short of a truly amazing experience. So again, Frank, thank you so, so much for joining us. And this podcast was brought to you by the all new, almighty onemosaic.life. It is our brand new website and we are so excited about it. Hop on there to find more information on guests, on talks, on conversations, get access to exclusive guest interviews, and register for our brand new contest. This month only, if you register for our email list, The Circle, you will be entered to win our Vibe Box, which will get you two of our favorite books, as well as some other goodies. Hop online, onemosaic.life, to register to win. And hopefully it goes without saying, your privacy is important to us. We will never sell your information or spam you. That's just not going to happen. We care about you way too much for that. You can also do us a favor by following us on Instagram at onemosaiclife. We like to share content throughout the week, inspirational messages, and updates on what Ernie and I are working on. And if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts or any other platform where you can leave a review, it would be amazing if you left us a review. That helps others find out about our podcast, helps us get bigger and better guests, and just helps us become better individuals. Last but not least, if you really, truly find value in this show and it's helped you through a difficult time, you can support us by making a one-time or a recurring donation. You can do that on our website by clicking Support Us, or in your podcast player at the very bottom of the show notes, you can click Support This Podcaster. A few dollars goes a long, long way in helping us grow the podcast, which includes contests, merchandise, and in-person meditation classes and other events. Again, thank you so much for listening. If you're a new listener to the podcast, we hope you'll subscribe and we will see you next week.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of spring deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save big today on new arrivals from Kate Spade New York, Nike, Sam Edelman, Free People, and Madewell, starting at only $30. Great brands and great prices on dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and more. So rack your look and get first dibs on spring styles you want now from just $30 at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?